Chapter 12. Endings. After a few days, St. John Rivers visited me with his dog, Carlo. We sat together in the garden and he asked me how things were going. "I like my students very much," I told him, "and the cottage is clean and comfortable. I'm sure I'll be happy here." "My advice is, don't look to the past," St. John said. "Work hard now. That's what I'm going to do when I go to India and work as a missionary teacher. It's part of my job as a clergyman." Suddenly, he stopped talking as a young girl appeared at the gate. Her name was Rosamond Oliver and she lived near the school. She had green eyes, rosy cheeks and dark, pretty hair. St. John turned red as he introduced us, and after a moment, he looked as beautiful as she did. "My father's alone this evening," she told him. "Will you come with me and visit him?"
"Not tonight, Miss Rosamond," he replied quietly. "Not tonight."
"Well, goodbye then," Rosamond said. "I'll come back and visit you again, Miss Eyre."
Rosamond Oliver kept her word and visited us quite often. Whenever she looked at St. John, his hands trembled and his eyes burnt. He seemed to say, "I love you, and I know you love me, but I've already given my heart to God." Why was love such a complicated thing? One snowy winter's day, St. John came to the cottage. He looked very pale.
"Why have you come in such bad weather?" I asked him.
"I wanted to tell you about a letter I received from a lawyer called Mr. Briggs," answered St. John. "He's looking for you. He told me all about you. I know you worked for Mr. Rochester, and he asked you to marry him, even though he already had a wife."
"How is Mr. Rochester?" I cried. "What is he doing? Is he well?"
"I don't know anything else," replied St. John.
"Then where's Mr. Briggs?" I asked. "He might know more about Mr. Rochester."
"Mr. Briggs is in London. But don't you want to know why he was looking for you?" asked St. John. "It seems that your uncle, Mr. John Eyre of Madeira, is dead. He left you all his property, and now you're rich."
"I'm rich," I repeated slowly. "Why?
How much did he leave me?"
"Oh, not much, Jane," my friend answered with a smile. "Only £20,000.
I couldn't speak for a moment. Then lots of questions started to rise in my head. How did Mr. Briggs locate me? Why had he written to St. John about me?
"Very well. Prepare yourself for a shock, Jane," he said. "My full name is St. John Eyre Rivers. Your mother was my dead father's sister."
My heart stopped for a moment.
"So my mother was your aunt?" I asked incredulously. "We're first cousins."
"Yes," he replied. "We're first cousins, Jane.
And God brought you right to our doorstep in the rain." I couldn't believe my change of fortune. Now I had become rich and I had a family. It was a miracle. St. John's family had saved my life. So I wanted to do something for them in return. I had £20,000 that we could share and have £5,000 each. "Let's visit Mary and Diana and tell them about our good fortune," I said excitedly. "I've never had brothers or sisters, but I can have them now. Will you be my brother, St. John?"
"Yes, Jane," he replied. "I'll be your brother and my sisters will be your sisters." He smiled and left the house.
Time passed and I got closer to my new family. They were so kind and friendly to me that I felt really blessed. But just before Christmas, St. John told us that Rosamond Oliver was marrying a man called Mr. Granby. His sisters looked at each other when he told us this piece of news.
"How long have they known each other?" asked Diana.
"They met 2 months ago at a ball and they'll be married soon," said St. John. "Let's not talk about her anymore." Then he changed the subject and suggested we walked in the gardens.
"Jane," he said, "please come to India with me and help me with my missionary work."
"Oh no, St. John," I cried. "I can't do that." Suddenly, my heart beat fast and I felt a very strange feeling, like an electric shock. I heard a distant voice crying, "Jane! Jane!" It was Mr. Rochester's voice. He was in pain and he was calling out to me. "I'm coming," I cried. "Wait for me." I ran to the road and looked out, but there was no one there. "Where are you?" I shouted. "What was it, Jane? What did you hear?" asked St. John, but I could not explain. I told the school that I was going away for about 4 days. "I must visit a friend I'm worried about," I explained. I left Morton on Tuesday afternoon and started my long journey. At last, I arrived at a familiar inn. "How far is Thornfield Hall from here?" I asked the innkeeper. "About a 20-minute walk," he said. "It's across those fields." I decided to walk, but before I left, I looked at the name of the inn, the Rochester Arms, and my heart jumped. I was nearly home. I walked across the fields, eager to see beautiful Thornfield Hall. But instead, I saw a burnt-out ruin with no roof, chimneys, or windows. The house was as silent as death. A terrible fire. How had it started, and who started it? I needed answers, so I walked back to talk to the innkeeper at the inn. He told me that a fire had started in the middle of the night the previous autumn, and the house had burnt down. "Do you know how it started?" I inquired. "Yes, miss," he answered. "You probably don't know, but there was a lady, a lunatic, in the house. She was Mr. Rochester's wife. There was also a young lady governess at the house, and Mr. Rochester fell in love with her." "Tell me about the fire," I interrupted. "Did the lunatic start it?" "Yes, miss," he said. "One night, the mad lady set fire to the curtains in one room and then set fire to the bed in the governess's room. Mr. Rochester helped the servants out of the house and then he went back to save his mad wife. She was on the roof. I saw her with my own eyes. She was a big woman and had long black hair. He called to her, but she screamed and jumped off the roof. The next minute, she lay dead on the ground."
"Dead?" I cried. "And what happened to Mr. Rochester?"
"Mr. Rochester didn't die," said the man. "But he's blind now."
"Where is he? Where does he live now?"
I asked impatiently.
"At Ferndean," said the innkeeper. "On a farm about an hour's ride from here. He lives alone with his servants."
"Can you take me there?" I asked. "I'll pay you generously."
I arrived at Ferndean before dark. The house was quiet. The only sound was the rain. I opened the gate and saw a man standing outside without a hat. It was Edward Rochester. His servant, William, approached him and said, "Take my arm, sir. It's raining. Let's go into the house."
"Leave me alone,"
answered Mr. Rochester rudely. William went inside. Mr. Rochester called to Pilate and continued walking about in the rain. I walked over to him and stood there silently. Pilate recognised me and came to lick my hand.
"Who's there, Pilate?" Mr. Rochester cried. "Who would come out in such terrible weather?"
"It's me, Mr. Rochester," I answered. "I've come home." He turned in my direction and said, "Is it really you, Jane?"
"Yes, sir, it's me," I replied. "I've come back to you, sir."
"Jane Eyre, Jane Eyre," he repeated. "Will you stay with me now?"
"I'll never leave you again, sir," I replied. "Will you marry a poor blind man, Jane?" he continued.
"Yes, sir," I said. "I will gladly marry you." Reader, I married him. It was a quiet wedding, and my cousins Diana and Mary Rivers attended it. St. John had already left for India. One morning, after 2 years, I was writing a letter when my husband entered the room. "Are you wearing a blue dress and a gold chain?" he asked excitedly. "Yes, I am," I replied in surprise. "How do you know?" He told me his good news. He was beginning to see more clearly in one eye. Sometime later, when I put our baby into Mr. Rochester's arms, he saw for himself that his son had eyes like his father's.